This is a test. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, And the first home rule concept that has been applied uniformly in America is the Indian Reorganization Act. And this is an outcrop of liberal institutions in the name of Americanization of Indians. And so American Indian law is not a foreign institution, it is a creature of the American people. They have opted for themselves these responsibilities by their desire, by their choice. We did not ask them to do this for us. So when you take a look at American administration, you Anglo-Saxons better watch out whose administration it is. It is your laws. And so state of Alaska came into the brotherhood of states, and the primary condition for the evolution of government in this country is with the treaty of does Alaska Natives have treaty? I'd like to put this question to rest. Do Americans have a treaty? The only treaty that we are entitled to talk about here at this time is how American administration came in. And we were a victim of selection by the desire, by the imperial desire of American expansion. American administration came upon Alaska Natives. And so the good faith that I would like to demonstrate, and where the good faith of the United States have not been demonstrated, is what it did for us in the name of ANCSA. And so this legal relationship that everybody is talking about, I am a victim of the process of which we are dispensing our peculiar situation. We did not get involved in this unilaterally. We were volunteered by Congress to be in this mess. So bear with me, because some of you are responsible agents for having created such an archaic mess by being blessed Americans. And Alaska Native land claims and state of Alaska, upon our entry, what we have in the state is, when the land claims negotiations process came about, all of us volunteered that this would be a way, a meaningful way, and a dialogue for the Alaska Native people and the United States government can harmonize and resolve a question of real estate transaction. And so we went in good faith, and some of us came out lot less than what we thought we'd come in from. And so since this is an American law, the people that were victimized by this were not asked their permission if they would participate as consenting adults to this Americanization, to this process of liberation or process of being free. And in the, which we call land claims, the definition of freedom to an Eskimo is different from a definition of an Alaskan, what he thinks freedom is in the state of Alaska, under the eyes of a Section 6 person. And the definition of freedom is still different from a person that you have exempted, the people of Alaska have exempted to exempt from its laws, from its claims, the Alaska Native people. And this compact, the Alaska Statehood Act, we came in as equal. Alaska Native people came in equal to the state. So those of you who are concerned about violation of equal footing, I think that that our equal footing has been destroyed in the assumption of greed, exploitation of states' rights and character, which are contrary to federal law. So where we are today and where we were in pre-ANCSA settlement is taking a look at the Bureau of Land Management, State of Alaska, and all of the regional corporations, and all of those valid existing rights that are about to be shut out by FLIPMA, which some of you feel that it is not important to reveal what are the implications of FLIPMA to Alaska Native people. And here again is that the misanthropic American assumption of Indian justice. We automatically assume that we're going to give Indians and Eskimos their due by taking something away, not even asking their permission. When you do this, when you mandate this aggression, this alienated aggression that came upon and prompts upon the Alaska Native people by an alien force called legislation, ANCSA has become that alienated force which is destroying or have destroyed the basis that the American people have so aptly volunteered to put it under its administration, this responsibility called trust responsibility. So what we did in Alaska is when the Indian Reorganization Act was planted, what we found out was the charter of this Home Rule Charter was uniform. It had everything in it except the boundary of the land that the Indians and Eskimos resided on was not defined. Whose responsibility under the United States is it that the boundary question resides at? And this is very important to Alaska because ANCSA was not a jurisdictional act. So what we have done in the name of Americanization of Alaska Natives is that we have created another land enclave, which we now have colored and say Native corporations. Although by law, state of Alaska cannot discriminate, but it has these discriminating corporations, where in her own constitution, that it forgave title, interest, and equity in Section 4 of the Statehood Act. So when we talk about the Indian Eskimo process, I think that you have to be so clear. Are you talking about the victim by the state, Are you talking about that cherished product that the Bureau of Indian Affairs have under their responsibility? Or are we talking about group of people that have not been conquered by legal and civil procedure? And these rights today, in the American context, are important. How we deal with the Alaskan question is equally important on how we deal with the Indian question in South America. So the American administration, the John Marshall Doctrine, and its implementation and its legal effect today in Alaska, if we were to exercise, and the Bureau of Land Management and the BIA, if the government was in an ideal situation where we exercise all of our rights that we are entitled to, and those 13th regional corporations, provided that the legal abandonment of the United States when it no longer wants this responsibility of trust be executed according to its statute, that it has a statute for abandonment by itself, and those people that it had abandoned in Alaska are entitled to the level of relief that the United States is going to give. And this level is, with this level of support of abandonment that the United States, provided that these people wish to abandon themselves. In Alaska Native land claims, we did not even ask them. They were volunteered to be abandoned. So is this a taking question? Is Section 14C3 a taking issue of lands without compensation? Harry, that you give these people a creature of call ANCSA, and this is what you're going to do. However, on 1,280 acres, you are now going to voluntarily surrender this to somebody whom you don't know. You don't know this creature, but you have to do it. And are these questions of equity, are these questions of conscience that were imposed upon the Native people, how do you think we feel about this? No, we view this type of intrusion unwarranted. It didn't happen to the rest of the Americans, but it happened to us. And state of Alaska, whom some of you think so highly of, and thinking that it is so great, let me tell you, my role in the development for home rule for our area, I was one of the principals that organized a petition for the North Slope Borough and went through the constitutional self-development from the IRA charter, from the federal authority. When we had found out that we were not, that we were going to receive less than the entitlements that we had desired from Congress in the Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement fight, we saw the American corporate invasion coming in to annihilate the Eskimos with whatever means necessary. And this also incorporated the mischief that it created with the oil industry in the state of Alaska. And the North Slope Borough is a first-class home rule borough. To this very day, this great state of Alaska, who has been crying to Congress that we are not giving any, that it is not receiving any of its lands, but the lands that it had selected on the North Slope Borough, it has not given 1 acre to the North Slope Borough government. So when the citizens of Anchorage or when the citizens of Juneau or Fairbanks cry about the Eskimos up north are wanting high schools. Is that an un-American activity desiring the services that the state of Alaska in its constitution had chartered? What is wrong with local people doing it for themselves? Somehow that the people and senators from Anchorage think it's an un-American activity to have a high school. And so we on the North Slope had attempted to preserve the corpus of the Inupiat Empire under any administration. And if we were to implement the law that we have in front of us and state of Alaska of giving us the 10% of our land selection entitlement, and we were the only people, if it was not for Native American Rights Fund, the creation of local rule, local self-government would still be retarded if it was for the industry and state of Alaska. We had to go to court to prove the versatility of American citizenship is so versatile that it also encompasses Inupiat. And even though that the political nature and the greed of these elected officials in the state of Alaska, the 25 years of her management of natural resources has been deplorable. And this assumed knowledge and grace and goodness that it has is completely non-existent. Everything that we had to do up north, we had to go for it ourselves. Everything that we got in the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act in there that is of any substance was brought by you, by us. And the American administration, state of Alaska is part of that administration. I know that it has its appetite and desires, but more important, it is a self, the Constitution of Alaska is also a surrender and a self-limiting document to what state of Alaska can do and cannot have. And once the American people start dealing with the native people not as a foreign, alien force on earth, and to deal with them in the human context, and the problem that was volunteered to us by the bureaucracy and by the weight of the bureaucracy. Today, the past 12 years have been horrible, and the future looks brighter for the simple fact that they forgot one big thing on who we are. They forgot to erase. They may steal your land, but they forgot to erase the Eskimos, Indians, and Aleuts as a race. So the human rights, the rights that we cherish, and the rights that we want to pass on, we do not want them terminated in the manner like the Federal Land Management Policy Act did to the Alaska Native people, slap the Americans in the face and told the rest of the American people that they are not no longer going to enjoy the fruits of the public land of America and blocked everybody out, including Eskimos, Indians, and Aleuts. I think the most disgraceful event occurred in the year 1976 when the Federal Land Management Policy Act was passed. However, it was so shocking that the federal government felt slightly embarrassed so that they could go back in 1980 and wash their hands, because some people could eat and make a living off the land that they love and so cherish. So the question of jurisdiction and where we are today is real. The option that we feel that it is essential in order for justice to be rendered to the Native Alaskans is that we should ask them, what would you like to do? Would you like to reestablish? I would like to see Restoration Act passed and to give title to Title 25, take this monstrous, headless wonder called ANCSA and give it a head called Eskimo, Indian, and Aleut under Title 25, and then we can go and deal with normal federal tribal relations as they had been originally designed for. And so for my part, and where we are coming from, I was involved in all of the process of negotiations. And I would feel delighted that if the commission would submit its report to Congress, and this commission ask the Inuit Circumpolar Conference to file their report and ask for it to be codified under Title 28, 1492. The findings of the commission and a bill for compensation would be drafted a remedy to either house, and under Title 28, 1492, and to correspond with Title 28, 25, Section 2509. I believe that the facts that this commission is going to have recorded are correct and true, and I believe that the certification of the truth to the United States and its full impact of a law that crippled three cultures. I am sure that this findings of this report can come into law and for their certification to be submitted to the U.S. Court of Claims. And I would like to make this procedure open, that before the report is finalized, that the commission submit to the Inuit Circumpolar Conference the possibility of submitting the findings directly to Congress under Title 28, 1492, and then to be submitted to the U.S. Court of Claims, to be filed to the U.S. Court of Claims, and that the findings of this would become law, and that remedy that the commission have found would be corrected, that would be the last draw, provided that the government is not embarrassed enough on their own initiative to have a Restoration Act as part of the American administration. But I say to you, as an American on the ICC, that I will seek for certification of this report, and that we take it, that we are so serious, at ICC that we will sponsor Title 28, 1492 recommendation to be made for ICC to certify the findings of this body so that we can bring it to justice.
Thank you, Charlie. Charlie's helped give us some idea how we got here. Maybe I could bring us back to David Case's proposal for village home rule. And David Getches, you wanted to...
Well, I do want to get to that, but I wanted to follow up on something that's right. suggested by Charlie's points that he made. I guess from the beginning here, I've been wondering where all of this, that is this week's meetings, all of this should end up. And I guess you have to ask, where are we coming from? Charlie did address where are we coming from. But I think that there's been this underlying notion since we got here that something's wrong. Something's wrong in particular with ANCSA. And we've gravitated immediately to the Indian law. That may be that the deck is stacked here. That's all any of us know about is Indian law. And so maybe we're seeking that out as a an area of solutions. I'd like to turn the clock back for a minute and look at what the late 1960s notion of all this was, what this discussion would look like if it were the late 1960s, the year 1970, when the final negotiations were taking place for what ANCSA would say. I think that the view at that point of Lower 48 Indian Organization was a view of poverty, paternalism, powerlessness, that it wasn't a very desirable scenario. Alaska Natives could look at their own villages and see a replication of that poverty, paternalism, and powerlessness, and I don't think that they wanted very much to be, as the saying went, under the thumb of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. I think that at that time there was a rejection of Indian law, of the Indian organization that we're talking about today. I don't know how much thought was given to that. The things that I was told, and I'm much a latecomer to this, when I first got involved, the act was almost passed, and people were saying, look, we don't really want to hear much about Indian law and Indian organizations. We've got a better way here. The corporate form is better suited to doing business. It gives us more independence. It avoids the overbearing influence of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Never mind some of these alleged advantages. We have the declaration in the act that the settlement is to be accomplished without establishing any permanent racially defined institutions, rights, privileges, or obligations, without creating a reservation system or lengthy wardship or trusteeship, without adding to the categories of property and institutions enjoying special tax privileges, or to the legislation establishing special relationships between the United States government and the state of Alaska. The act is a clear rejection of these Indian law notions that we're now returning to. Now, either...
No question about that.
Now, either what happened at the time that this act was drafted and the provisions negotiated was wrong, or something went wrong between that time and now. I'd like to start by asking Charlie. I know there are a couple other people in here that were involved in that process, but I don't think anybody was more involved than Charlie Edwardson in this room in the process of getting to this act. The question I have is, what were the discussions then?
The process that were involved was at that time was, had we not come up with the corporate form as a mechanism for resolution, Alaska Native land claims would not have passed today. So So the methodology of the corporation brought the settlement into a scope that the Anglo-Saxon community can deal with.
Excuse me, Charlie, could I just intervene here for a minute? We went into this at length in March, David, and for about 3 weeks, and Charlie and many others who were in on the ground floor participated. And I think it's fair to say that, as I think, and this was Charlie's view and the view of most others, including some of those from Congress, that that Congress wasn't willing to consider a settlement with the tribal governments. It was not prepared to duplicate in Alaska the story of failure that Indian communities and Indian reservations meant to Congress in 1971. So they weren't prepared to consider that. Now, all I'm saying, Charlie, is that I don't want us to go back over all of that ground again, because we considered it at length, and I know, David, you've just sort of walked in the door today, but I'm really concerned now and for these next 3 days, okay, where do we go from here? We all know what's wrong with ANCSA, and we all know what 1991 means. I've been into the bush, and I know what those people have told me. They want a measure of local self-government. They want to retain their land. How do we manage that? How do we do that?
Well, I think that we may not know completely what we know. Something's wrong with ANCSA, but how much of it do you want to do away with, and how much of the old Indian law and Indian forms of government do you want to bring back? That is, I think, more in tune with what we're supposed to be doing here.
Okay, but I really want to know whether the you see, the people in the villages are talking about IRAs, because that's what they've got. They've got IRAs and traditional councils, not all of them, but many of them. So it naturally occurs to them, well, let's transfer the land to the IRA. But the IRA is a government. It isn't just a title deed. So I'm really concerned about what an IRA implies in Alaska, what traditional, tribal government implies, where that gets these people. If after all of this 13 years of concern and debate, can we make advances combining the advantages of ANCSA, and there are advantages to ANCSA, federal Indian law, and perhaps forging some new pathways ourselves? We're not locked into all of these structures. I mean, they aren't the only structures that Native people can consider, that Congress can consider, and I just think that having brought all of you together, I don't want you to spend your time going over the ground that we discussed at the very beginning of this work in March.
How much of the IRA form do you want to revitalize?
Well,
isn't that the question?
Yeah, I want to know more about it.
And in the process,
work in the lower 48.
In the process, how much of ANCSA do you want to throw out?
Let's talk about IRAs. We've talked about ANCSA for 9 months. Let's talk about the way in which Native people are governing themselves in the lower 48 and in other places, and how is it working?
On the degree of what you want to cut off, I have a proposal here from ASRC's 1991 committee, and it gets to the very point of what we're dealing with. And so I would like to get to the root of the matter. And then if you cannot go back to Section 4 of Alaska Native Land Claims, you cannot go back. And then look at this proposition, and so that you will not deal in ANCSA as an abstract, why don't we get to the definition of Section 4 and go down with the proposal that is in front of you, and see how one region views this situation.
Well, I'll tell you what I think I'm going to do. I'm concerned that we
and
should.
And that your concerns no,
well, Charlie,
be answered.
Yeah, let me finish. I'm concerned that we spend the time dealing with the things that will show us where we go from here. This is a resolution that no doubt a lot of thought has gone into, but until we've had an opportunity to take a look at it, it seems to me that we should carry on as planned. Sheldon and Reed wanted to say something, and then I think we'll take a coffee break. And
yes, as far as what the question you had, Dave, regarding how far do you take this? The answer lies in the fact now, where were tribal governments in Alaska? Not in 1971, but before 1959, okay? We were the sole local government in the territory of Alaska in our areas. And it's time the state realized that. Our councilmen were the sole reference at all to law and order. The federal government, by imposing upon itself the trust responsibility, says it will guarantee to at least maintain whatever peace, whatever dignity, whatever sovereignty that we as tribal governments had. And if an act such as ANCSA totally demolishes not just our tribes but our tribal governments, then this is conquest by paper. And it is a greater sin than conquest by war, because it is devious. And we have a right as tribal members, as tribal governments, to have those responsibilities carried out, not to the worst of the United States' ability, but to the best of their ability. And the primary thing that you have done with the Land Claim Settlement Act, and especially with 14C of that act, is that you have taken Native people in whom the federal government has sworn that they have a trust responsibility to maintain their peace, their dignity, and their sovereignty as a tribe and as tribal governments. You have taken that protection of the federal government with no compensation whatsoever by a few words on a piece of paper. You have made Alaska's Native citizens into law-abiding, tax-paying, voting citizens of the state of Alaska, and thereby liable to all such liabilities as that may be, in violation of their own right to government. Our governments have been here since time immemorial. Nobody knows how old they are. Why can you come in and say, because we have this piece of paper, we now have extended our jurisdiction over not only you and your tribe, but over your tribal government as well? That, if that is not conquest, I don't know what is. And you have no right to do that. Nothing can be taken from us, our people, our tribes, our governments, without our consent, no matter what you write on paper.
Reed?
Genocide by legislation is just as bad as genocide by war. Thank you.
Reed, did you want to add something?
Well, Tom, I can't say it as eloquently. I think the answer to your question is that there is no alternative but what he's saying. In other words, that what you'll find if you inquire about, not how IRAs work, because there's some, as we've said, there's some governments that are IRAs and there's some that are just traditional governments. That's true in the lower 48, that's true up here. There's really no alternative but supporting it and trying to make it work, because that's the only way people can control their own environment, whether it's native people in Alaska, or whether it's Indian people in the lower 48, or whether it's any people anywhere. I mean, Aboriginal people or non-Aboriginal people. That the, I mean, what you find in the lower 48, I represent a number of tribes, and of course I can't tell you which ones work well and which ones don't. That would be disclosing confidences and saying things that I'd rather not about particular clients. But it's certainly true that you have some, I mean, a lot has happened since 1969. Dave and Charlie and I got into representing Indian tribes about then. And whatever the fairness of somebody saying in 1969 that in the lower 48, the Indian tribes were pockets of poverty and were controlled by the BIA and were not functioning well as tribal governments, a lot has changed since then. There's still some tribes in the lower 48 that don't function very well, and there's some tribes that function very, very well. Some tribes have separate judiciaries. David and Ralph, of course, can report and probably should report to you sometime during these 4 days about the enormous strides that have been made by tribal courts in the lower 48. Tribal legislative institutions function much better now than they did. There are whole tribal executives now that have been set up by mostly by federal grant programs, although sometimes by tribal taxes, setting up service departments or setting up regulatory departments, a minerals department, for example, to oversee oil and gas leasing on the Wind River Reservation in Wyoming is just one example that springs right to my mind. But whether these institutions are working well or working poorly, isn't the only solution to the problem that you're addressing is that there has to be a concerted effort made both by obviously the native groups that are the tribal governments and by others in the society to support them to enable an answer to the question 10 years from now that yes, these governments do work well. I mean, that obviously the people are capable of governing themselves. The question is whether they have the resources and financial support to do it. And a lot's happened in the last 10 years to bring that about through 638, particularly through Public Law 638, but also the Tax Status Act and the Indian Child Welfare Act, the Indian Financing Act. A lot of very positive things have been done on that. So I guess I suggest really what we've got to do is not ask the question about whether they do work other places or not, but really how can we set up institutions or help Sheldon and Charlie and the other native groups that represent the tribes of Alaska to set up institutions here that can work within this framework to control land use, to protect subsistence.
Rosita? Ralph?
I never cease to be educated by these proceedings. At the last session, we had 3 days of intense discussion on 1991 issues, which was largely devoted to discussions of corporations and intensive debate about what the nature of the corporation is, mergers and so forth. I heard people like Glenn Fredericks and a number of others say how happy they were with certain corporate structures. What came out of that, as far as I could see, was that not a denial of what Charlie or Sheldon or some others are saying here, but that there are some places out there where the corporations seem to be accomplishing what a lot of people want, and there are a lot of places where those are not, and that in a simplistic sense, if one wanted to go back to the IRA kind of government for all of Alaska or for places where regional or village corporations are successfully accomplishing what I heard a lot of people saying they should be doing, that would be contrary to the interest, at least of what we heard in this room and in fairly unanimous support. By the same token, If one sorts out and looks at two-thirds or three-fourths of the villages and sees that in those places the corporate structure is not effectively carrying out the wishes of the people, and I think the hearings, as I understand it from Commissioner Berger, indicate that that is their belief, that that is not doing what they want, then to consider the IRA or traditional form of government is indeed one of the most serious possibilities. But to change some of the village corporations near Anchorage, I can't name them, but some of those that seem to be eminently successful business corporations, to change back some of the regional corporations or regional lands, that's a different set of questions. And I guess the way I heard the last session was that there are some places this would seem to work and there are other places that would not. I'd be curious to know from those who know more about it than I do whether that perception is accurate.
Yes, Spud?
Amaze me that if village governments act as a city government or a state government, they're considered a success. You know, we heard this gentleman say that we've got some successful ones and some unsuccessful ones. And he mentions the successful leaps of tribal courts. At what yardstick is he making these judgments? You know, he's looking at it from a perspective, or his perspective, and this seems to be one of the fallacies of groups like this or state or federal governments looking at native governments. They have the wrong yardstick. They don't know how to measure successes or failures. If we do things your way, we are a success. But if it's different and you don't understand it, you don't know how to measure it. We're not speaking the same thing, and I think that's part of why this dialogue is having trouble getting off the ground. I think that you're trying to enforce a value system instead of listening to ours. Mr. Case done a very fairly nice paper, very short-sighted, very Western in nature.